Inside Outside. Türkiye'nin iç ve dış politikası Türkiye'li ve yabancı uzmanlar tarafından yorumlanıyor. Hazırlayan ve sunan Ekrem Edi Güzeldere.
Günaydın ve Inside Out programına hoş geldiniz. Good morning and welcome to Inside Outside. Açık Radyo'nun ilk ve tek İngilizce sözlü programı. Açık Radio's first and only English language talk show. Geçen hafta çarşambadan pazara kadar Goethe Enstitüsü'nün düzenlediği Türk-Alman çalıştayına Berlin'e yakın bir Brandenburg kasabasında katıldım. Orada 16 genç araştırmacı Almanya'daki entegrasyon tartışmasını, Türkiye'deki açılımları ve müdahaleleri tartıştı. Katılımcıların biri Eray Çaylı'ydı. Kendisi şu anda Londra'da doktora tezini Türkiye'deki müzeleştirme örnekleri üzerine mimari perspektifinden hazırlıyor. Çalıştay sırasında çalışmaları hakkında bir röportaj yaptık. Bunu şimdi sunacağım. Last week I participated near Berlin in the so-called Turkish-German Zukunftswerkstatt, where 16 young researchers with, let's say, a Turkey and Germany background participated and discussed during 3 days the integration debate in Germany, the openings in Turkey and interventions. One of the participants was Eray Çaylı, who is from İzmit, went to high school and university in Istanbul, continued his studies in Stockholm, and is currently preparing his PhD at the Bartlett School of Architecture of the University College London on architectural history and theory, with a special focus on museumification processes in Turkey from an architectural perspective as one element of coming to terms with the past. With Eray, we recorded an interview during this workshop, which we will present now.
How did you choose the topic? How did you get involved with these issues?
Well, actually, you know, my interest in how one can read these processes of coming to terms with the past of reconciliation through architecture and the built environment started with my participation in one workshop in Lithuania. That was a 3-week long workshop where we had a bunch of artists, designers, people interested in architect or working on architecture, congregating in Vilnius, and the theme was, you know, since Lithuania is a post-Soviet country, or an ex-Soviet country, and it has witnessed certain milestone events throughout the Soviet period, especially during the Stalinist rule. There's this history of forced migration or deportation to Siberia and to gulags, and in this post-Soviet society, these memories are emerging, and there are processes of facing up to this or coming to terms with this. And our job there, or that research project there, was more to ask the question whether one could deal with this difficult past in relation to its architectural heritage. For instance, a former KGB headquarters, monuments of Stalin, of Lenin, and there's a whole set of controversy also around these, because, for instance, we went to one park named Grutas Park, where we have Stalin, Lenin, Marx monuments. They're all removed from their original contexts and brought to this park, and now they're preserved there. Of course, they don't have pedestals, because pedestals are often about power and influence, but they're rid of their pedestals, and now they're just sitting there, and it's much like an amusement park. You go and visit there. But anyway, I mean, to make a long story short,
what
I thought
to the buildings, like, did they use them, or do they use them as museums?
So specifically speaking, for instance, they took us to a former KGB headquarter, which was now a museum, and it's a museum of horror or terror. I'm not sure about the exact terminology, but it's something along these lines. And I thought, you know, actually in Turkey, and back then this was 2009 summer. And I thought, you know, in Turkey we also have a similar history, or, I mean, it's not the exact same history, but still today there's this discussion about like the coups and how one could deal with the atrocities that happened throughout these coup periods, like different periods. And then I said, yeah, maybe this would be an interesting topic to look further into because it hasn't been researched, really, from an architectural point of view. Because when you look at these buildings in Turkey that are associated with particular atrocities, it's always one particular community, a minority group, however you may want to call it. It's always those people that claim the ownership, and it's pretty much identity politics based. For instance, if you talk about Diyarbakir prison, it's more or less the Kurdish movements claiming the ownership of the memory of this building or around this building. If you talk about Madımak Hotel, it's the Alevi movements. And I thought, actually, there is, like, it's not a coincidence that these discussions emerge in parallel, because it's at large, it's about a discussion about like how one could deal with this difficult past through the built environment or in relation to the built environment. That's why I wanted to connect the dots and perceive this or approach this problem, you could say, or this question from the perspective of an architecture historian or an architecture theorist.
So the demands come from these communities, but then these are usually state-run projects, or the state turns these into museums. How does that process work? Who demands for it? Who is doing what in that process and turning it into museums?
Well, it's mostly like when you talk about funding, the very ownership of the sites and those kinds of like logistical or technical details. Of course, it's the state sponsoring this, or you know, or they're the property owners, and it's the movements, let's say, the in general rights-seeking movements. They are the ones pushing the state or the government to actually reconsider their position regarding these buildings. So this museumification discussion is a constant process of, or a process of constant negotiation and compromises. And you can broadly summarize it as a process whereby the right-seeking communities, they come up with this demand for turning a building into a museum. And the government, they say, okay, we acknowledge your loss, we acknowledge your pain, but there are certain things we can do, there are other things that we can't do. So let's find a sort of a compromise that we can each settle with. And this was pretty much the case in the case of Madımak Hotel, where you had the Alevi movements demanding for a museum, and they were quite specific about the title, in fact. They wanted it to be a museum of shame, whereas the government, and this was one of the five key demands as part of the Alevi açılımı. Whereas the government said, okay, we acknowledge this, we understand your concern for commemorating this atrocity, and we can do something about the building, but not necessarily a museum, and definitely not a museum of shame. Because they thought, what they said was, there are more parties involved than just you. There's the people living in Sivas, there's other people, and they... I think it's fair to say that they also see the perpetrators or people who associated with the perpetrators of this atrocity as legitimate parts of this discussion. That's their understanding. So they said, okay, it's because this building had been serving as a hotel. At the ground floor, you also had a charcoal grill restaurant for many years. And this was the cause of a huge dispute, of course. Well, the government said, yeah, you're right. Let's get rid of this shame of eating grilled meat where people suffocated to death because they were arsoned. And let's shut down the restaurant and the hotel with it. So they expropriated this building.
Mm.
And then no one really knew that what was going to happen with it. And this is the core of the problem, according to my argument,
mm.
that all these transformations, they're carried out quite implicitly. And behind doors, you know, behind the scenes, and this is, I think, the core of the problem. And this is partly because there hasn't been so far an investigation into these buildings from an architectural perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Because once the building is expropriated, people start, like, rumors start circulating. They say, oh, maybe they're going to turn it into a museum. And other people say, no, actually not. They're not going to turn it into a museum. So no one actually knows about the specific process by which this building is architecturally transformed.
Mm.
So anyway, let's go back to the case of the Madımak Hotel. The government said, okay, we're expropriating this building. And then we're going to transform it. So it's not going to be a hotel, or we're not going to have a restaurant in there. And they ended up coming up with the idea of a science and culture center to be implemented at this site. So this is what they did last April 2011,
mm-hmm.
May 2011. And once, of course, this was in the press, it caused much upstir and dispute, and on the part of the Alevi movements.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, July 2nd is the anniversary of what is now known as the Sivas massacre, and Alevis go there in thousands to Sivas,
mm-hmm.
and they organize this commemorative demonstration where they march from the Ali Baba neighborhood, which is known as the Alevi neighborhood in Sivas, up until the Madımak Hotel, and they end their demonstrations there by putting flowers there and chanting slogans and so on, and commemorating their loss. But this year's commemorative demonstrations were characterized by this reaction, by this dispute that the Alevi movements had towards this idea of a science and culture center. They were totally unhappy with it, in fact, furious.
Mm.
And
what's the major reason for their unhappiness?
The major reason.
What do they criticize
the
most?
Major. Well, there are several reasons. When you talk about in a conceptual sense, in terms of terminology, they're basically unhappy. From day one, they wanted a museum and a museum of shame.
Mm.
They were quite particular about this, and having a science and culture center is not enough to satisfy their demands.
Mm.
But talking in terms of physical aspects, in terms of architectural elements, there is what the government calls a commemorative wall.
Mm.
Now, within that science and culture center, once you enter the building, when you turn right, there is a commemorative wall with 37 little fountains,
mm-hmm.
and 37 names, and the very number 37 is enough, actually, to cause dispute from the Alevi movements, because as we know, 37 people lost their lives in this event, but two of them were perpetrators, another two were hotel workers,
mm-hmm.
and 33 were the actual guests who were invited for the Alevi festival then, and these were writers, poets, singers,
mm-hmm.
artists, and so on.
And do you think there's a chance to still change these things? Could it still be turned into a museum? And
you never know. That's
the commemoration of only the 33 or the 35.
Well, I think the Alevi movements, amongst themselves, they haven't settled on the number issue,
mm.
Because, well, definitely 37 is not an option, but some say, okay, we will acknowledge the loss of the two hotel workers. They're laborers, as they say, and you know, they also lost their lives doing their duty.
Mm.
But the 33 is, of course, a key. Like, there's always a distinction of the 33 as opposed to the rest. And 37 is never an option. So if I could go back to the issue of the commemorative corner there, or the commemorative wall. So when you go there, you walk into the Madımak Hotel, you turn right after the entrance, and you get this wall with 37 little fountains and 37 names. And these 37 names obviously includes the two perpetrators. And the list is arranged alphabetically. So the first name that comes up as part of the list is actually one of the perpetrators. And this was a specific reason why the LAVs were furious about this arrangement. And then you also have a quote by Mustafa Kemal on that commemorative wall, which I may translate as, only if we're able to forget our differences, we will be able to achieve great success, or something along these lines. So it was more like they thought, or the ones that I've been talking to, who are part of the Alevi movement, they think this is not an attempt that's sufficient to acknowledge this loss.
And now shortly to finish, that is an ambivalent, let's say, example, because it changed the building, but not in a way that the movements wanted it. How should it work in the future? Or do you think there's a learning process also in the state that might work out better for Diyarbakır or for Yasser Adı or for other examples? Should there be a commission of government and the movement together how to incorporate more the views also of the movements involved?
Of course, I don't see myself, neither my research as a sort of a mouth to pronounce proposals regarding these places. What I'm more interested in is the ways in which different political actors construct their narratives of this recent past through or in relation to these sites that have witnessed these atrocities. And another issue of interest for my research, and I think this is another perspective that I can contribute with, is the differences between the case of Turkey and other contexts that have witnessed similar difficult pasts, and the architectural heritage dating back to those pasts and how they've dealt with those. And I think this is a striking difference when you talk about the case of Turkey in relation, or as opposed to, let's say, Germany, where you had the Second World War and then the Holocaust, and or let's say South Africa, you had the apartheid. First, it seems to me as if that there's, my research kind of suggests that there's first a legal framework established regarding the past period, and there's a constitutional change. For instance, specifically speaking, you can't deny the Holocaust. And the people who were the perpetrators, they were thrown into jail. They were punished. And if you talk about South Africa, apartheid was sort of disintegrated as a whole. And the process of coming to terms with the past also included many elements, not only buildings, but you had radio broadcasts of people confessing or of trials live on radio that were accessible to the larger public. So I think in the case of Turkey, it's more of a testing out process. And since you have the very person who was leading the last conventional coup is painting pictures, paintings in Bodrum or in Marmaris. If you talk about the Madımak Hotel, the case of the Sivas massacre, certain people have been punished, but it's not I think there's a certain consensus among the right-seeking groups that these atrocities haven't been dealt with in a comprehensive manner. So, but yet again, there's talk of coming to terms with the coup period, even from the side of the government. Bülent Arınç wrote this op-ed article for The Guardian right after the last elections in June, saying the coup era is over. And this was a really key statement, I think, that there seems to be a sort of a consensus for a need to come to terms with the coup, with what is called the coup era, or with this recent difficult past that Turkey has experienced. But there is not a comprehensive legal change or constitutional change. These steps have not been taken. And this is why architecture kind of emerges, I think, as a tool for the right-seeking groups. Mm. They sort of turn away from law, maybe you could say, and look at architecture in terms of its opportunities to push the society at large to come to terms with the past. So it's a very ambivalent process, like you're saying. It's open for change. I think since it's not a defined process or a process as strictly defined as a constitutional change or legal infrastructural changes, it's always open for amendments, for new transformations. So it's more of a, you could say it's a step, of course, if you perceive it from the government's perspective. They would argue that they're making an effort, at least. You could criticize the effort, but they're making an effort to approach these rights-seeking communities. And you could actually tell that this is such an ambivalent effort, and it's always open for change, just by studying what happened at Madımak Hotel, because they only transformed the first two floors, and the upper three floors are still abandoned and idle, so they haven't been transformed. And so you could say it's always, we're never sure what's going to happen in the near future, not even the midterm or the longer term. But yet again, this is the problem, I think, that in terms of architecture, in terms of a physical change, that these processes are always implicit and perhaps a bit too ambivalent.
Many thanks to Eray, who is currently still in Berlin, for taking his time into these contributions. If you're interested in his work and articles or presentations, you can visit his website, www.erayjaile.com. Since it's Bayram holidays, I will decide later the week about next week's topic and guest or guests. During the next weeks, however, I will definitely discuss German-Turkish relations, including the issue of German foundations in Turkey, the Turkey-Armenia relations, and Turkey and the Arab Spring. Have a nice and calm week. See you next Monday.
Inside Outside. Türkiye'nin iç ve dış politikası Türkiye'li ve yabancı uzmanlar tarafından yorumlanıyor. Hazırlayan ve sunan Ekrem Edigüzeldere.